Good evening and welcome to the Gnostic Waves radio show, where we talk about all things mystical, philosophical and psychological, and include a bit of meditation too. So you are with your host, myself, that's Diana Azam, and tonight I am joined via Skype by a very special guest, a Gnostic instructor from Newcastle, New South Wales, Christian Keith. Hello, Christian.
Hello, how are you doing there?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Yes, you're welcome. So tonight, Christian, you're going to be talking on the topic of consciousness.
Yep.
So why have you chosen to speak on this particular topic?
Basically, when you asked me, I wasn't quite sure what to talk about. And so you asked me, it would have been about 6 months ago, and I was thinking, what would be best? You know, what could I convey to the listener that would help them the most, I guess? That's what I sort of came up with. So what I decided to do is I thought, what would I like to have heard before I come to Gnosis? Because I've been doing Gnosis for 8 years now. So what sort of teachings would have liked to be explained so I can get a better understanding of what Gnosis was?
Definitely something that would help to be able to transmit what actually, you know, the essence of Gnosis is.
Well, the consciousness is a very, very interesting topic. And as you said, one of the core topics of Gnosis, that everything you could say revolves around the nature of consciousness. So we talk about it a lot, and we're interested in its expansion and awakening. And I guess it's what defines us as human beings and as a humanity. So without the consciousness, we're dead. We're physically dead. If we have someone who's passed over and who's died, we understand that that body is no longer animated, and it's by virtue of the consciousness which has them awake and living. So in order to understand the consciousness, we have to understand that it makes us, as human beings, be alive, we could say, to live. So we have to look into that and understand in a deeper way what consciousness is. And if I could put it into one word, I guess we could say, or because it's very hard to discuss the consciousness with words, but if I was going to talk about it in one particular way, I would say it's to do with the nature of perception, that the consciousness is that part of us that perceives reality and life, to see, to perceive the events and what is unfolding in front of us. So the consciousness itself is an internal aspect of our life and how we perceive reality. So we understand that reality really is the events of life itself. And this is an external aspect of life. So when we have breakfast in the morning, when we go to work, when we drive our car, these are all the events of life that take place, and we take our part and our role within that. However, it's the interaction of the internal world, which is the consciousness, and the external world, the external events, sorry, that brings the flavor of our life. The consciousness is said to be subjective, while reality is objective. So we understand that our consciousness, that each person's individual consciousness, is for the most part different, that we will see as subjective and relative, that we would see the same event in a different way. And this is what is important to understand about the consciousness, that an event can be seen in a very negative view by someone, but in a very positive view by someone else. So I always like to use the example of a promotion. So we have an event of life, we're at work, and we've decided that we want to go for a promotion at work. And someone else gets the promotion. So the person who gets the promotion, my friend, let's just say, is very happy. His consciousness in that moment is happy. While my consciousness at that time could, and more than likely would, be unhappy or angry or depressed. So we have the same event, but we have the consciousness in different people working in different ways. We have to sort of look into that and see, well, the event's always the same, but the consciousness is different. So reality itself is objective. Reality, events, life are always seen in the same way, so to speak, or unravel in the same way. However, the consciousness sees things in a very different way. So the consciousness itself can be of a high vibration or a lower vibration. And when we talk about the high vibration of consciousness, or an awakened consciousness, or a consciousness that is awoken and not trapped, we could say, the consciousness works by virtue of happiness and joy, which more or less comes from within. So it's not so conditioned by events. For example, if my consciousness was awakened, we could say, to some point, and I don't get the job, I'm still happy. I'm disappointed, but I'm not going to go and suffer for it. You know, go into my room and eat ice cream, or I'm not going to go and yell at people because I'm angry, and I'm not going to complain because I didn't get the job. I accept reality for what it is. Consciousness always works in the moment. So someone who has a high level of consciousness will be connected to the events in their life. For example, a mother who has just given birth. Such a beautiful event that happens. So much physical pain, you know, the 9 months, all these sorts of things. And when the mother first gets the baby from the doctor, and is cuddling it, the mother is in the moment there. She's not really thinking about her taxes. You know, she's not really thinking about her football team. She's at one with the baby, we could say. She's at one with the moment, and she's so happy, and, you know, the father's there and all that sort of stuff. So the consciousness is balanced and in harmony, as we've sort of alluded to, that it naturally knows how to work and act in a given moment. So, for example, we'll talk about it later, but we can very easily react negatively, we could say, or in a bad way to events, and then we're not balanced. So, for example, we could be in a group and our consciousness wants to lead the group, but we're actually one of the lower members. And so we want to be balanced there. We will take our role as being a follower, let's just say. So we might want to lead even though we're followers at that particular point. So we're not in balance with the situation. For example, like we give lots of Gnostic lectures. If someone comes into the which does happen, comes into a class and they want to give the lecture, they just want to talk. It's not really their duty or role to give a lecture. It's the person who's standing up front. So they're not in balance and harmony with the environment. So other aspects is that the consciousness is always working within us and the events of the flow of life. So we could say with the consciousness, things are easy, things are simple. We naturally revolve around the events of life. I like to say that when the consciousness is active, the events of life are like a beautiful song, and each second that flows from moment to moment. So things are simple. Things aren't difficult. We take things as they are. I was thinking about this and I was trying to reflect to give an example And I was thinking like a basketball player, because when I, back in my youthful days, I used to like playing basketball. And there's some times when everything clicks together and we get in what's called the zone. And when we get into the zone, you shoot the basketball and it just goes in. Everything works. You start to see the events of life. You start to see the people guarding you, and you just understand what to do and where to go and when to shoot and when to pass. And it's the same way with the consciousness. The consciousness just knows how to act naturally and simply in the moment. And the other aspect, which is very strong, is that the consciousness is wise. So it has an understanding of why it is doing something. So in that way, it's very powerful, because a lot of times in life, we don't know what we're doing. And the consciousness has a strict understanding of why it's doing things. It doesn't, we could say, mess around. So in that way, the consciousness working has a lot of benefits. Things are easy. We're happier. We're joyful. But unfortunately, what happens is that consciousness becomes tracked or becomes subjective, and it becomes out of balance with reality. And we begin to have problems in life. And when the consciousness is trapped and is trying to force reality or its version of reality onto things, the most obvious thing that happens is pain and suffering. So, for example, an example would be the consciousness is trapped, say, by anger. So in that promotion, I don't get it, and I just become angry. My consciousness becomes trapped and lost in anger. And so anger doesn't accept the situation. It doesn't accept the events. It feels like someone has taken something away from me, that there is an obstacle in my path, which in this case would be my friend who got the promotion. And so I feel angry. You know, we can feel hatreds. We can feel envies, jealousies, fears, all these sorts of things. And these aspects bring pain and suffering, because the consciousness wishes for a certain reality to come into being, we could say, which hasn't happened. So we're not talking about, so we're not in the moment anymore. We're not connecting with the reality presented in front of us. We don't see things for as they are. So we can very easily complain about our life, but not realize how well we have it, especially in a country like Australia. So we can be a person who's always complaining about their kids and their family life and the person at work and the boss at work and all these sort of things, but doesn't really realize that they could be a starving child in Africa. We're not really in the moment. We prefer to see things in our own way, but we don't get our way. So as we said, we can be out of balance when we have these problems with the consciousness, out of harmony. We don't really, anger takes us out of our the events and stops that flow of life. For example, when I start yelling at someone, the flow of life stops within that person. You know, I'm sure you've been angry before, and we can do crazy things. So for example, if we're driving along and then someone cuts us off, we can be so angry that we want to go and cut them off. And then that doesn't happen. And then we follow them follow them all the way, and we look at them and we get out, and then a fight starts, and then we've just lost everything, you know. So the natural flow of life was maybe just to get to work or to get to the place where we wanted to go. But we've gone so far out of our balance of what we were initially wanting to do that we've ended up punching on with someone. So it takes us completely out of balance with our environment. And as we said, we are not in the flow of existence. The consciousness immediately stops the flow. So that song of the consciousness that we naturally flow with stops. So sticking with anger, because we know anger, everyone knows anger, like a child who has a tantrum or something like that. You know, the child wants a Mars bar or something like that at Woolworths. And automatically the flow of existence stops there, and everything has to stop. And the child yells, and the child can have a lot of power over the adult, but nothing's going to stop. Nothing's going to keep going until I get that. So when the consciousness is trapped in this way, in our fears and our envies and in our angers and all these aspects, we can run away from events. So, for example, with the promotion, now I run away from my friend. I don't want to be his friend anymore. You know, I can become depressed over this matter. You know, as I said, we can want to change events, and I can be angry and I can be complaining and talking to my fellow workers and sort of saying things about how he doesn't deserve it and all these sorts of things. And we go away from just working. So it wants to do things at events it's not meant to. So we have issues with this consciousness. And the problem that we have with when the consciousness is trapped or lost in these aspects is that the consciousness is the central tool for us to understand reality and life itself. And so when it's trapped in these ways, we forego the comprehension and understanding in the moment for these states of consciousness that are low.
We'll just go to a short music break where we've chosen the piece Gymnopedia number 1 by Eric Satie. So we'll be back in a few minutes on the Gnostic Waves radio show. Okay, and you've just been listening to a track by Eric Satie, Gymnopedia. And you're listening on the Gnostic Waves radio show. We're joined tonight by Christian Keith from Newcastle, New South Wales, talking on consciousness. Now, Christian, could you go through some common misconceptions of consciousness? I know that if you ask, a variety of people, I'm sure they would have a variety of different definitions of what consciousness actually is.
That's right. So that's one of the main reasons I just wanted to give a basic overview to the understanding of consciousness. And now to talk about some misconceptions that we might have frequently asked questions to be answered, to best try and allow the audience to understand or see the consciousness in a new light, I guess we could say. So I guess the first aspect that I'd like to talk about is that we believe that we have a default state of consciousness that we cannot change. So this was a misconception that I had before I came to Gnosis, that the way that I am is the way that I am. Essentially, psychologically, you know, that some people change bits here and there, but overall, we generally perceive ourselves in the same way and that we can't change. And it's a mystery that we have that. We don't usually think about our psychology. We don't usually think about our consciousness. We don't really think about those internal aspects of ourselves that we normally have our, consciousness more on the external aspects of life. So about the promotion that we have that we missed, about the person who treated us badly. So as we said, life is ruled by two aspects. We could say life, which is external, reality, which is external, and the processes of those events, the process of the consciousness interacting with those events, we could say. So as I said, we believe the way that we are, that we act and feel, is the default state of who we are. So this is how life is, and this is how life will always be. This is the way that my life works, and this is, we could say, my lot in life. And we can think that life is just about suffering and that the wheel turns and then we're a bit happy and then the wheel turns again and then we're miserable and then we're happy again. And that life is just this sort of emotional circle of good and bad things, things that I like and dislike, good and bad events happening to me. However, if we look into our internal states, we can see even within ourselves, this is not really true. That our states of consciousness, we could say, are fluctuating. That sometimes we're happy and sometimes we're sad. So we have a possibility of change within that. For example, moods. Sometimes we're in a good mood, sometimes we're in a bad mood. And when you're in a good mood, it's great. And people can treat you badly and it doesn't bother you. I remember one time, a long time ago when I was a kid, I was at a football grand final. I think a final or something like that. And I remember when we'd won the game that everyone was just so happy and people who might not have treated, like everyone's been really polite, you know, after you and all these sorts of things. So they're in a good mood and that good mood was everywhere. So sometimes we're happy and sometimes we're sad. So when we're in a bad mood, we can hear the greatest news, you know, and it just falls on deaf ears. So it's a bit like Groundhog Day, I guess, our life. We like to talk about that in Gnosis, where we have a cycle of happiness and sadness within our life. And the Tibetans talk about that with the wheel of samsara in different levels. So we have to understand that we can change, that Gnosis posits that we can actually change our states of consciousness, that it's possible that we can be happy all the time, that if we work on ourselves, we can expand our consciousness, we can understand it and awaken. So I just wanted to mention that. And the second point that we have, which continues on from that, is that consciousness is processed in states and states and levels and levels. So within, usually in movies we see this, where there's a hero or something like that, and there's sort of like a before and after of awakening, that we see consciousness in a very dualistic manner where someone is either asleep or we usually call it asleep or awake. So they don't understand reality and now they understand reality. So in movies a lot we have that with when Neo takes the pill. I always forget whether it's the red or the blue pill. I think he takes the blue pill and then he sees reality for what it is. So before and after. And there's been movies recently which in a way talk in this manner. There was a movie called Lucy and a movie called Limitless where these people are taking drugs and then they awaken in some way. It's not really the way, but that's the way that we see it, that it's a before and after type of thing. But really consciousness is levels and levels and we have to work on it. So we understand these levels if we look at ourselves as we've talked about before. For example, if we look at the level of a Dalai Lama has a high level. You know, he does good things, we could say. While someone like a guy I always like to pick on, Adolf Hitler, had a low level of consciousness. So we have to see these inside of us that it's not a dualistic way that this consciousness is processed levels and levels and levels. So to not fall into the trap of that, we can just awaken naturally, which we'll talk about.
Christian, I just wanted to add about that drug taking and that I think a lot of people, you know, want to awaken consciousness, want to experience another reality, and that's the only way they may think to know, which, you know, we're not endorsing, but it's just, just interesting to comprehend what the motivation why people search for those experiences.
Well, people do like different states of consciousness. So there are people out there who take drugs for the very simple reason as it takes them out of their normal default consciousness, that you could say. And it takes them into, we could say, an esoteric reality. But it's not done, we could say, well, it's done with drugs, and it's not constant, and the drugs have side effects and things like that, we could say. So when we talk about it in gnosis, we're looking to alleviate all suffering within us, not just have the experiences for what they are. Yeah,
to make them more like real, not just an experience.
That's correct. Yeah, the states of consciousness bring us to a point where we're close to reality, not further away, we could say. Yeah. So my next point is that we believe ourselves to be awake and that we're functioning to our full capacities. So this is, once again, another aspect that I personally felt that I was doing pretty well, we could say, because we're alive and we can do as we feel like and as we wish. We believe ourselves to be awake. We believe ourselves to have free will, which is another topic, that we can pick and choose events and things as we like. So presently we see that our consciousness is good enough, we could say, to function day-to-day life. So our consciousness allows us to live in society, to have a job, to have a family, have our happiness and sadnesses, our dramas, our problems, our triumphs. And for some people, that's enough. We can understand that. But in gnosis, we posit and we say that there is more, that we wish to gain more from life, we could say. And we can see, I would personally state how I see it, in two ways that we can sort of see that our capacities are limited in the consciousness that we presently generally have as a humanity at the moment. And the first one is that we have a continued and repeated pain and suffering, the will of samsara that I've talked about, that we suffer. So the consciousness, suffering is not real consciousness, we could say. We can say that we can remove pain and suffering, that the Buddhists talk about this in the Four Noble Truths, and we talk about it in gnosis. So the consciousness continually in suffering is not the way that we can be, that we can be better than that. And that's a powerful thing, because could you imagine not suffering? Could you imagine never being angry? Could you imagine never being fearful? You know, to never be envious, to never have, you know, problems in these ways. And the other aspect that's very strong that shows me personally that my consciousness is not fully awake is that I don't really have the capacity at the moment to answer the big questions in life. So as I said, the consciousness as it is functions well in my day-to-day life. But if I have a hankering to understand the big questions of life, so, you know, is there a God? What's the meaning of life? You know, what are we doing here? How did humanity start? All these sort of questions. What is the cosmos? What's the meaning of the cosmos? What happens after we die? All these sorts of big questions. What's love? What's reality? If we have a capacity, we don't have the capacity to truly understand those questions that in the way in which our consciousness is functioning at the moment. So we have to understand that we're very limited at the moment, and what we really need to do is start an internal dialogue with our consciousness and start to, we could say, perfect it and purify it. Because as we stated earlier, the consciousness is the tool of understanding reality. So if we perfect that tool, we can perfect how we perceive reality in a more correct light. So really, that's the process that we need to go under. And for example, like people who are skeptical, are interested in the direct experiences of life, and they're interested that they can perceive certain aspects. So they can only perceive the physical life, and they're not really interested. Well, they're interested in looking for esoteric life, we could say, in an esoteric reality. But the thing is, with a skeptical person, they can't perceive it based on their consciousness is limited. And this is the extra aspect that skeptical people don't see. It's not so much that reality is as it is, because that's the way that reality is. It's that the consciousness as it is at the moment is like a blunt instrument in understanding life and these big questions and why we suffer. So if we want to answer these questions, it's like, I always like to use the example of a saw that's not sharp. And so you're trying to chop a piece of wood with this instrument, but the teeth are blunt. And so the tool is not good for the job. It's good for some things, you could say, but it's not good for the real dissection of the truth, we could say. So that's our real error that we have, that we believe that the mind and the consciousness is at its full capacity, or we're doing well, when it has a huge possibilities for much more. And then when we develop the consciousness, as I said, these questions become more easier to, we could say, experience, because that's really what Gnosis is about. It's knowledge through experience.
Most definitely. I'm intrigued by the idea of establishing the dialogue with our consciousness.
Yes. It's the most intimate aspect that we have. And the problem that we really have is that usually our consciousness or our perceptions are outside. So we're interested in the events of life, the external aspects of life, but we don't really look at the internal aspects of life. So it's interesting that Gnosis is a deeply esoteric school, we could say, but the psychology and the consciousness are the tools and the means by which we can experience those esoteric realities. And so, as I said, the tool is blunt, is poor. And so as we begin to sharpen that, we can start to see more of reality itself. So Gnosis is about that. And so we call that self-observation. So instead of observing the external nature of how things are, we begin to see the internal nature of how our psychology and our consciousness is. And that's essentially what meditation is. Meditation is removing all the senses and all the aspects of life. So we close our eyes and we relax in a dark room and we remove all the senses. And then we begin to see what the mind, the consciousness is doing and how it's acting. And that's really one of the steps in understanding ourselves, because usually in life, psychology is for people who have really big problems, and we want those people who have no longer fruitful members of society, we give them psychologists so they can become good members of society again. But in Gnosis, we have that psychological aspect, but we take it even further and even deeper to purify those aspects. So one of the other aspects is that the consciousness is not the intellect, which is another aspect that I, when before Gnosis, I wasn't quite sure, because I thought they were sort of similar. So the consciousness itself is, as we've said, a higher aspect than the intellect and the mind. And the consciousness doesn't have to think so much. It sounds bizarre. It just knows. That's why it has that wisdom. The consciousness just knows what to do. Well, the intellect, we could say, is a more lower aspect. So I'll try and give you an example to better understand the differences. So, for example, if we have something like nuclear technology, something as simple as that, with the intellect, we can justify making a nuclear bomb to spread fear in the world against us. So we build, we have this nuclear technology, and the intellect was like, you know, what's a good idea that we decide to make this thing that can kill lots of people, create lots of destruction, and that will be good for us because people will be scared of us because we have the best weapon. So that's the possibility. That's the intellect talking, that we could say. But the consciousness would be more interested in how that would affect everyone in a positive way. So that nuclear technology would be used as a source for fuel, we could say, to help all of humanity. Because the consciousness is interested in everyone and how everyone works, not just ourselves. For example, in that same ballpark, we're run by politicians and all these sorts of things, but they're really of the intellect. Well, yeah, we could say. So let's just say someone has $20 billion. If the consciousness had that money, it would give it away to people who need it, because it doesn't. You don't need $20 billion to live. Well, someone of the intellect might very easily justify why they need all that money. So it's interesting that we generally feel that the world is run by the intellect, and to some extent it is, but it's really run by the consciousness, how we consciously work with things. And that's why we have so many issues and problems with the world, because our consciousness is trapped in those issues and those problems. So the consciousness would solve world issues, but a consciousness that is lower will unfortunately not be able to do that. And so the intellect has to come in to be able to, we could say, solve and dissolve the problems of our life. Because that's what Gnosis is about. It's about being happy. It's about understanding really the happiness of all human beings, we could say. And so
when you talk about the consciousness, I think, and I relate it to intuition and how when we don't listen to our intuition, we are often really unhappy.
Yeah, that can definitely happen, definitely. Because the intuition and the consciousness just cuts through everything. So it's not like when you get an intuition, it's not like we sort of say, oh, we've got everything on list A and these are all the negatives, and then we've got all the positives here, and we're going to weigh them up, and, you know, this is how we might go this way, and then these factors. And the consciousness doesn't really work that way. It just kind of knows. The intuition just knows how to act and what to do. So its power is immense, to remove that suffering, as we said, in our lives, and to understand deeper realities. So the last aspect that I wanted to touch on is that if we wish to raise our consciousness, if we're interested in expanding and awakening and opening up this aspect, if we feel like we would like to remove suffering, if we feel like we really want to answer these questions and really know these things, effort is required. So there's a mistaken misperception generally in life, especially in the New Age movement and these sorts of things, that humanity will naturally grow and awaken, that humanity and human beings will naturally evolve into greater beings, that you don't really have to do anything, that will eventually turn into like Star Trek or something like that. I was thinking like 2001 Space Odyssey, there's that sort of aspect with the child at the end of the movie. It doesn't really work like that. Even in normal life, whenever we want to do something, an effort is required. And it's the same for raising the consciousness and working with the consciousness. We really have to put in efforts to understand, to comprehend the nature of this precious aspect that we have within us. And it's not going to take time. It's not going to just happen overnight, as we've said. We need to take time and effort. We need guidance. We need meditation. The wise old men that we know about, that we see in movies and we've heard about, the sages who are wise men, they're generally old men because it took their lives, their whole life, to work in this endeavor. And that's the nature of how Gnosis is awesome, because it brings science and religion together. So usually in our life and the way that we are now, science and religion is very oppositional, that you can only be in one field or another, generally speaking. But what Gnosis does is it brings science to the nature of religion and to the nature of mysticism and the nature of esoteric realities. And as we said, it starts within the consciousness. So both of those have to come together to realize the consciousness, that usually the normal science that we have is about events and phenomena in the external world. But Gnosis brings that scientific approach to our internal worlds. And that's where we gain big leaps, we could say, step by step, to understanding reality as it truly is.
Yes, and that is the rightful place of science in mysticism and understanding ourselves and our universe, I feel.
Yeah, because the problem is that they take out that element and they only have a physical reality. So there can't be, for example, in medicine, they believe in the physical life of the physical flesh and the blood and the bones and all these sorts of things. But in Chinese medicine, as we know, they deal in the etheric body or the etheric energy of the person. So Chinese medicine understands that next level, we could say. And so they can do more things, we could say.
Well, we'll go to another very short music break. So Christian has also picked the track by Fore, Pavane. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and then Christian will lead us through the meditation part of the show. So back soon. Okay, and we're back on the Gnostic Waves radio show. You've just been listening to Fore's Pavane, or a short section of it. And so now we move to the meditation part of the show, and Christian is going to be guiding us in tonight's meditation practice. So, Christian, take it away.
Thank you, Diana. So everyone at home there, by their computers or by their radios, just turn out the lights and find a very comfortable position. So the way that we do meditation in Gnosis, we only really ask for two things from the physical body. So the first is be as relaxed as we can, to make sure that we're comfortable. We don't need to have these crazy yoga poses or anything like that, or have legs in a certain spot. Just however we feel comfortable sitting, on a chair, on the ground, however you feel like, and to have the spine straight. So we close our eyes and we start to, we could say, remove the five senses. So we no longer can see. We have smells, but we leave them, we let them go. Anything that we can hear, we just let go. Taste, we let go. And our touch, we let go. And so it's important to relax the physical body, because when we meditate, the physical body can get in the way, we could say, of the consciousness. So the consciousness becomes trapped in the physical body, we could say. So in a joint or an itch. So just starting in our left foot, begin to relax that whole foot.
relaxing the calves. Relaxing the thighs. And when we're finished, moving over to the other side, starting with our other foot, relaxing it. Moving up to the calf, to the thigh, relaxing the body can be very enjoyable. It carries so much tension that we have from the day. So relaxing the buttocks, moving up the back, where we can hold a lot of tension. And so we get to the shoulders, relaxing the shoulders. Going down our left arm, slowly but surely, relaxing any tension in the bones, the blood, skin, the muscles. And then moving over to the other side, from our shoulder all the way down to our five fingers. Moving to our torso, relaxing the torso and moving up our chest, taking our time. So eventually relaxing the neck, the head, and lastly, the place where we hold a lot of tension, the face. So just being more conscious of the tension in our face, whether it's in the temples or the forehead, in the cheek muscles. And just feel it relaxing. So I'll ask everyone a question. Do we control our mind? Do we have control of our consciousness? So we can reflect on that. So if we can control our mind and our consciousness, We should be able to control our thoughts. So I ask you in this meditation to stop the thoughts coming into your mind. So if you cannot control your thoughts, it means that you cannot control your mind and your consciousness. So the question is, who is in control of your mind and your consciousness? So slowly we can begin to open up the senses, to start to listen to what's going on around us, to feel the chair that we're sitting on. Slowly begin to open our eyes. And when we're ready, this practice is over.
Fantastic. Thank you, Christian.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's our pleasure. And hope you all enjoyed that talk and practice from this evening. If you need any more information or you want to listen to this show or any past show recordings, then please head to the gnosticwaves.com website. That's gnosticwaves.com. And also if you are in the Newcastle area or you know anyone in the area that is interested to learn more about Gnosis, then please do look up Christian and his partner's So's group over there.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so everyone's free to come and the contact form. It's www.newcastlegnosis.org. Almost forgot it then. Or they can just put Newcastle and Gnosis into Google and I think we come up first.
Excellent. Okay, and that's all we have time for this week. Thank you for your company and we will hope you join us same time, same place next week. So good evening.